Many of the world's most treasured architectural and cultural gems are threatened right now by the pressures of climate change, conflict, overdevelopment, and neglect. For the past 60 years, the World Monuments Fund has led the way in raising awareness of the need to safeguard more than 700 sites in over 100 countries around the world. Every 2 years, the WMF releases a watch list that identifies another 25 significant sites that need urgent support to help protect and preserve them. To tell us what's on their just-released watch list for 2025, we're joined from New York now by the head of the WMF, Benedict de Montlaur. Benedict, we're so glad to have you with us today on Travel with Rick Steves.
Thank you, Rick, for having me. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Now, I tried to describe the World Monuments Fund, which you are the CEO and president of. Did that sound okay, or I hope I got that right?
Yes, it sounded perfect. You know, for 60 years, we've been partnering with communities around the world to safeguard their heritage, their irreplaceable places. And that takes many different shapes. So that's why it's always hard to encapsulate. But the bottom line is that we are the leading organization working with communities to safeguard heritage.
Now, how did you end up being the president of the organization, and why do you care?
Well, I ended up being the president of this organization because I was a diplomat and I lived in the Middle East. And then I headed the French cultural operations in the U.S., hence my accent. Sorry for that.
I love your accent. Don't be sorry.
And after that, I was looking for a new adventure to stay with my American family here in New York. And I started at World Monuments Fund, which is absolutely wonderful because for me, it's a continuation of cultural diplomacy through heritage. Through this preservation work, we are able to foster mutual admiration, understanding, and respect between communities around the world and through very concrete things, you know, the preservation of the major achievements of humanity.
Well, this is so important because when we lose a cultural treasure, it's gone. And the list is out now. Every 2 years, there's a list. What's the big news for the list in 2025?
Well, let me talk first on how we have this list, because
okay.
It's not me sitting in New York who decides what's on the list. It's in fact a very bottom-up process. We receive nominations from all over the world, from small villages, from places in Africa, in Asia, everywhere, Europe, nominating sites to World Monuments Fund. And it's fabulous for us, as you can imagine, to discover all those places. And also to see the trends. What are the major threats to heritage right now? And then we examine all those nominations. We have a high-level independent panel of experts, and we decide on 25 places that we think are the most emblematic of the threats to heritage today, but also we think as an organization we can have an impact. So to answer your question, finally, what is the big news? Well, the big news is that this year we've listed the moon.
The moon. I guess that makes sense because there is a little bit of heritage on the moon, and that might be more important than we realize.
Well, there is much more heritage than anyone would think, you know, and it all depends on your definition of heritage. Heritage is this tangible traces of humanity and humanity's achievements. So when you think about humanity's achievements in the 20th century, the first steps on the moon were quite important and captured the imagination of human beings all around the world. And when we received this nomination, of course, we were very surprised and intrigued. And we worked with the nominators as well as with scientists. And now we've been in talks with NASA. So it's, of course, fascinating to realize that you have 90 historic sites on the moon, the sites of the first landings. You also realize that you still have those famous footprints of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin on the moon. Those pictures that we've all seen, they are still there. You have a golden olive branch. You have a disc with messages from more than 70 leaders, messages of hope. So you have lots of things on the moon. And as we are entering a new era of space exploration, we think it's really the right time to get organized, you know, for people to build a mechanism of protection of heritage in space. So for us at World Monument Fund, you know, we preserve the first footprints in archaeological sites of humans in Africa, all the way to the first footprints on the moon. So that's like the history of humanity, one step after another.
And if you're asleep at the wheel, we say, you know, if you're not paying attention, something could happen and those could be destroyed and we would never have that again.
Yeah, exactly. Once it's lost forever.
We're looking at what's included on the latest watch list from the World Monuments Fund right now on Travel with Rick Steves. They've just released their biennial list of endangered heritage sites out of some 200 that were nominated. And as you've heard, this time there's even one that's out of this world. Their chief executive officer, Bénédicte de Montlaur, is joining us from their offices in New York. You can read about and see photos from all 25 sites of the 2025 watch list and find out about this year's events to promote their preservation. It's on their website, wmf.org. Okay, now we go down to earth again. down to earth. And of the 25 threatened sites in this year's list, 24 of them are actually on the earth. And I would think they are emblematic of a greater challenge. For instance, climate change can be a threat to cultural sites. Do we have some sites on the list this year that are threatened because of climate change?
You're completely correct, Rick, and we've seen it as a trend from one cycle to another, and it was so interesting to see that this year, more than two-thirds of nominators quoted climate change as a threat to heritage. And it was especially true in Africa. In Africa, it was completely overrepresented. 81% of nominators quoted climate change as a threat. So you have very emblematic sites. You have the Swahili coast, which is this whole coast where the Indian Ocean meets Africa. And it's just an extraordinary set of places because you have a mix of European, African, and Arab culture. You have the cities of Zanzibar, of Lamu, the island of Mozambique. And all those places are threatened by coastal erosion and sea level rise. And so for us, it was mind-blowing to receive all those nominations from the Swahili coast. And so we decided to put the whole coast as a site threatened by climate change in itself.
In previous years, I remember African concerns were the growing deserts.
Exactly. Like the impact of climate change on heritage can take many different shapes. So sometimes it's sea level rise, but sometimes it's drought. But, you know, closer to home here in the U.S., we received also a very interesting nomination for the lighthouses of Maine. 66 lighthouses that are also threatened by sea level rise and by heavy rain pattern. And so we received that nomination and we were delighted to highlight this ensemble of lighthouses because we think they are so important to the cultural identity of this region. And we want to try and help to save them.
So this reminded me that the list of endangered sites is not limited to less developed countries. Many sites are in the wealthiest parts of the world, and they also need a reminder in raising public awareness that this is a treasure that is threatened. I noticed you also have the historic indigenous Great Trading Path in the United States.
Yeah, and that's a place that is not that well known by many people, and it's really important. It dates back to the 16th and 17th century, and it's an old ensemble of routes in the southeast of America where people were exchanging fur and deer skin. And over time, they were paved with roads and railroads and highways. And still today, this Great Trading Path is active for indigenous communities, for annual powwows, for religious ceremonies, for burial customs. And so it's really important first to recognize their existence because that's the first step to raise awareness about the existence of those places and then to trigger some preservation action. But, you know, as you're saying, it's not only less developed places. Like from my home country, you have La Sorbonne. Like that was a surprise to me,
too. The Sorbonne, oui.
How come the chapel of La Sorbonne, when you go to Paris, if you stand on the Place de la Sorbonne and you see this dome, that is in fact the first dome built in Paris, who would imagine that this place has been closed to the public for several decades? You have thousands of students having their lunch in front of that place. You have millions of tourists coming there and it's closed. So we say it's places at risk, but it's also places where we think there is a huge opportunity to do something meaningful. So in that case, it's meaningful to be able to welcome students and tourists and Parisians and to tell them the story of intellectual exchange at La Sorbonne.
It started 60 years ago in New York and soon took on work to preserve landmark buildings and masterworks that were damaged by the catastrophic flooding in Venice. That's where the World Monuments Fund developed an international model for heritage conservation. We're learning right now on Travel with Rick Steves about their work from its CEO and president, Bénédicte de Montlaur. They just released their 2025 watch list of 25 culturally significant but threatened sites around the world, sites that are in need of urgent attention and protection. You can find links to their work with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. When we're thinking of general threats to cultural treasures, sometimes cities are growing so fast they just overwhelm fragile bits of our heritage. How has that appeared on the list for 2025?
Well, so indeed, like we've asked our nominators what were the main threats to heritage, and it was really interesting to see that urbanization was very much quoted in Asia. For example, is the Musi riverfront, which is in Hyderabad, India. Like, it's one of the most important cities in India. And there we received a nomination for Musi and waterfront, because this is where you have a whole ensemble of historic buildings that need to be preserved and that need to be put into a sort of cultural route.
Because without raising awareness and having some guidance, it can be purchased and developed over.
Very often, you know, people, for good reasons, they want to develop their neighborhoods, they want to build new buildings, which in itself is not bad. But the thing is that if you don't pay attention to the historic fabric, well, you lose a big part of your identity, but also of the value of your city. Then, I mean, Europe is full of those examples like Paris, Italy, Rome. What would they be without their historic fabric? So at the end of the day, you may lose a lot of value if you don't preserve your heritage, because this is a resource.
And raising awareness to that and an appreciation of that is a service provided by the World Monuments Fund.
Absolutely. What we want is to highlight that, you know, preservationists are not people who are preventing you from doing what you want to do. Preservationists are people who highlight the value of heritage for your community and how it can bring something about your sense of identity, your sense of community, but also economic resources.
Amen. It's so important. And something very, very tied in with that is tourism. Tourism can be a great thing. It's an important part of the economies in so many countries, especially developing countries. But tourism can also threaten things. One of the sites that made it on the list this year, I noticed, was monasteries in Albania.
Yeah, those are extraordinary monasteries from the 16th and 17th century, from the post-Byzantine period. And what's interesting there is that this is a valley with around 10 monasteries. And during the communist era, they were closed. And so they were not maintained and they fell into decay. Today, our nominators from Albania want first help to restore those monasteries, but also to draw attention and tourism there. Because if you have tourists going there, then it gives resources to the communities and the communities are encouraged to take care of their heritage because they want more resources and more tourists. So tourism is definitely what we call a double-edged sword. Because when you have too many tourists, for example, we have extraordinary grottoes in China on the list. And there it's really about tourism management because everybody goes to the same place and you have to make sure that you don't destroy heritage by having too many people. But there is another component of tourism is that you want to attract tourism, but it has to be respectful of the multiple layers of history. So, for example, on the list, you have another site, which is the island of Seriphos in Greece, in the Cyclades. Uh-huh. And there, of course, like lots of people like to go there to look at the beautiful island and to sit on the beach. But the truth is, like one century ago, the main resource there was mining. And so the idea there and why it was nominated to the watch was to preserve the history of the island about mining. I think it will make tourism so much more interesting because not only you can go to the beach, but you can learn a little bit about the history of the island. And so it gives more to tourists because they have more options of what to do. And also they have a deeper understanding of this community where they are spending time. What is their history? Where are they coming from?
You know, Bénédicte, the final thing I'd like to talk about is cultural sites that are victimized by tragic wars. You know, we all, our hearts are breaking for the war in Gaza and the war in Ukraine. And I noticed that there are sites for each of these war-torn regions on your list. Can you talk about Gaza and Ukraine in the sense of the World Monuments list?
Absolutely. So obviously, conflict is a big challenge to heritage and a big threat to heritage. And it has been very true. We all remember what happened in Afghanistan with the Buddhas of Bamiyan. We all remember what happened in Mali, what happened in Palmyra. Very often, heritage is targeted. And so in Ukraine, we inscribed Teacher's House, which is a very emblematic monument of Ukrainian identity. You know, it's even on the banknote in Ukraine. Mm. And so it was targeted by a Russian missile and its dome exploded. And so we want to work with the community to restore this place. You know, very often people are asking us, why and how are you working in those conflict zones? Well, the answer is that first we work where we can. So in Ukraine, we have a colleague there who leads all our project. And second, we choose very carefully. Like, of course, we are not going to rebuild everything during a war, but we pick places that are particularly emblematic for the country.
And then in Gaza?
Well, so in Gaza, as of last December, UNESCO had identified 75 sites that have been damaged since the beginning of the war. What's interesting, too, is that people are not necessarily aware of all the layers of history that you find in Gaza. This heritage represents approximately 12,000 years of history from the Neolithic era to now. And so you have a very diverse heritage there. The Church of St. Porphyrius, for example, built in the 12th century. You have the Great Omari Mosque, which is the oldest and largest mosque in Gaza. You have the Anthedon, a Greek harbor archaeological site. You have a hammam that was built by the Samaritan community in pre-Islamic times. So you have many places that represent the different cultures and communities that have lived there. And many of them, unfortunately, have been impacted by the war. And hopefully in the future, we'll be able to work to restore some of these places, because we think that in post-conflict context, sometimes heritage can really help rebuilding the community. So we are very active as an organization, for example, in Iraq. But we have some great examples in Cambodia, where heritage after a war has been instrumental in rebuilding the community.
Benedict, thank you so much for your work and best wishes for all of the mission of the World Monuments Fund.
Thank you so much, Rick, for having me.
Alaska has the kind of landscapes that have a way of humbling anyone who takes the time to venture to see them. Whether you're a first-time visitor or have lived in a corner of the state for years, we'll bring you top tips for experiencing so much of Alaska next on Travel with Rick Steves.